You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
On Radio 1, and I am joined by Harry. How are we doing today?
Oh, fantastic. Brilliant. Oh,
sorry, I'll just turn you on.
Turn me on? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You naughty, naughty man, you. Yes, I'm very happy to be here. Excellent. What an incredible day. At least 100 times more sunny than yesterday. It's great.
Which would be one times more sunny.
Precisely. Yes, my name is Harry Almy, and I am director of the Goon Show saga written by Spike Milligan, foiled by President Fred.
Awesome. So the show is for Lunchtime Theatre, which is the School of Performing Arts.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on the whole program?
The whole shtick, the whole program. The Lunchtime Theatre program are these series of, you guessed it, folks, lunchtime theatre shows hosted at Allen Hall, starting with my show, and it will be going week to week to week with a series of shows for the semester. They are student-run, they are student-led, they are for you all.
For you all, you listeners, you.
You, I'm pointing at you. You can't see me,
but I'm
pointing right at you.
Awesome. So your one specifically is a stage adaptation of a Goon Show serial, which would have been a radio show back in the day.
Yes, it's not complicated at all.
No,
a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away of the 1950s, there was The Goon Show. I hope you've heard of it. If you haven't, give it a listen. It's great fun. But the shtick answering your question, it was a radio show. It was not staged. It was an audio-only experience. Oh. So, being a theatre production, I am adapting it to stage.
It wouldn't do very well if it was just standing and talking.
No. I think people would get a bit restless. You know, you want to be cooking when you're listening to that sort of stuff. It's great.
We need Family Guy clips on our phone.
Exactly. Oh, you know, TikTok, YouTube shorts.
Yeah. No, you need some visual stimulation
precisely.
Cool. So what was the process of adapting a radio show into a stage?
Yes, so this is the second time I will be doing a show like this. Last year, I directed the dreaded batter pudding hurler of Bexhill-on-Sea.
Oh, that is a title.
Yes, it was a bit wordy. The process we went through there, it was a process because it was a real challenge.
Sure.
When you adapt it, the intuitive thing is to literally play out what happens in the script on stage. But in the Goon Show, they have such a fantastic contempt for time and space and just scale that it would be impossible. Would be going up mountains, going into the ocean, giant cakes the size of the moon. Impossible.
Sure.
So we settled, with no small part thanks to the wonderful Martin Roberts, curator of Allen Halls, we settled on staging the recording studio and breaking down the wall between that and the audience.
Awesome. So I did see that in the press release. I was like, is this a sort of a meta adaptation?
Mm.
So the characters in your show are playing the Goon Show members themselves, as in Spike Milligan?
Yes, precisely. There are some few logistical onstage tweaks I've had to make, but yes, you'd say the lovely Broadhead is playing Harry Seacombe.
Sure.
The lovely Oisin Benz is playing Peter Sellers. The lovely Lindley is playing Spike Milligan. That's the core Goon cast.
Sure.
And they are playing those goons, and those goons have a variety of roles. They voice a series of characters.
That they would have in the...
Sure. So that is translated to my performance. So you get to see some behind-the-scenes silliness that you wouldn't normally see, but these individuals, they were characters.
Yep.
They were characters. Lovely characters.
It is fan fiction, a little bit, almost, of the... not to denigrate the process or anything.
I suppose you'd say fan fiction is one way to put it. In all stagings of all productions, there is a degree of creative interpretation. No
sure.
show is the same as the last. If someone else did the Goon Show, I'm sure they'd display it in a different way.
Sure. So the Goon Show themselves, because I'm sure there are probably a ton of listeners who don't know it very well. My dad is listening, I know that much, and he does know. Because people will know the name, or at least some people will know the names Spike Milligan, they'll know Peter Sellers, they might know some of the others, but just go over your sort of where you found out about them, how you have a history with the show, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you ask about my history with it. I was born in New Zealand, despite my accent.
Sure.
My parents moved here from Britain. So just one day, I was sitting down and they put on a record and they played the dreaded batter pudding hurler of Bexhill-on-Sea. And it was just the funniest thing I'd ever heard in my life. I think, yeah, people are confused about what The Goon Show is, but when you say those names, this sort of who's who of comedic geniuses, I think it falls into place.
Absolutely.
The Goon, and another way it falls into place, you might not have heard of The Goon Show, but I bet you heard of Monty Python.
Yeah, exactly.
And The Goon Show, which ran from 1951 to 1960, were influenced the Monty Python group, who ran from 1969 to 1979. The Goon Show, how to put into words, there's no genre, there's no prescription, it's just comedic geniuses with, as I said, contempt for any snooty description like absurdism or surrealism.
Sure.
It's goonism. Yeah. It's just insane fun. They do what they want, and it's just so unapologetically silly.
Yep. Cool. So yeah, and I love Monty Python. I've never heard, I will say, to my chagrin, I've never heard a Goon Show.
Mm.
But I know those names, and I know Peter Sellers especially because Dr. Strangelove is probably my favorite movie of all time. So I know what he is like, you know, I know his affectations and how he acts.
I think Peter Sellers in Dr. Strangelove and also the old lady voice they put on in Monty Python, that is very Goon Show, just to put sort of a face to the name.
Yeah. Just a little taste of the sound.
Yeah.
Is there something to the age of it that hasn't, that you don't think has aged well, or is there anything that you're trying to sort of, because it is from the 1950s and comedy, there is examples of comedy being old and outdated and not translating well into a modern age. Is there anything like that with The Goon Show, or is the silliness just so silly that it translates forward really well?
Yeah. I have to be completely honest. I had, like, after last year where I had the script I wanted to do, this year's script was a hard thing to do, and I had a process of whittling it down. In some ways, the comedy hasn't aged well.
Sure.
Spike Milligan was a genius, comedic genius, but from a radically different time.
Yep.
A time where homosexuality wasn't legal. No fault divorce didn't exist. Discrimination on the basis of race was not prohibited. It's insane to think how different it is. So there are some scripts where I suppose there's accents and affectations where I thought I wouldn't feel comfortable staging. I wouldn't feel capable of staging this in a comfortable way.
Mm.
In other senses, I think it has aged wonderfully. I think there is something about The Goon Show that is relevant to us today.
Sure.
That's why I do it, you know?
Do you have, like, a favorite sort of line that you could throw out, or a favorite idea that you could throw out that you think has aged well, really well?
I think what's aged well about it is comparing the times we're in and the times they were in. I had to double-check my facts this morning. The entire cast of The Goon Show, from the actors to the key composers, from all the background people, they were World War II veterans.
Wow, yeah.
Some of them met during the war and wrote during the war, and there's something quite compelling in our modern times where we can feel quite doom and gloom and put down, we turn on the television, we sob, that these people who fought during one of the worst events in human history came out of it and produced such unapologetic joy and fun and brought such smiles to the world. One of them, Max Geraldry, he was on the Normandy landings.
Right.
And he was a part of this wondrous thing. And I think in today's times, where we can feel quite put down, it is worth remembering and worth participating in the act of just unapologetic joy. And I'm sure that comes from a place of deep hurt.
Yeah, well, I think comedy in general.
Yes.
You know, if you know comedy well, or you're a big part of comedy, I think you'll know that most comedians are deeply hurt in one way or another. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You were talking earlier about how you are sort of one of the first iterations of this lunchtime theatre program. And you sort of said going forward that you would like it to be this show to be like a banner show and to get people into it. And
yes.
Do you have like a call out for people, you know, of the Otago University community to get behind it or to get involved? Or
yeah, to get involved, to come along. It's wonderful. These are such brilliant artists. Mine is the first. It's this silly bit of fun nonsense. And I'm leading the march, so to speak. But the banner I'm holding isn't the Goon Show. The banner I'm holding is Lunchtime Theatre. Cool. And behind me are such these wonderful people that you wouldn't want to sleep on. Go to the Allen Hall Facebook site. There is the programme. There is the list of all the other dates and productions. Go and see one. Go and and there are opportunities for participation.
Sure.
Lunchtime Theatre, I'd say, is nominally open to anyone, not just theatre students. But sometimes people outside of the theatre studies program don't see it. So if you want to just do some fun community theatre, just knock on our doors. Just go down to the office and would love to have you. I think there was this joke in 2023 that health sci students and law students came to Lunchtime Theatre to reclaim their humanity, to see some sun, to see a few mates, have a laugh.
To experience emotions.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, very cool, very cool. I'm glad to hear, because community theatre, I have a history of acting and directing in community theatre, and it is joyful and social in a way that not many other things are. Going through learning a script with people, going through the process of building a piece of art together as a group.
Well, it's like a sports team. You come out of it with a degree of camaraderie. Yep. There are people who I acted with in 2022 that I have not been with in anything else. I haven't socialised with them in anything else. And we see each other in the streets and we sort of grab each other almost. It's incredible.
Yeah. No, you're right. Sports team is good as well, because I often bring up sports on the show and I feel a little bit bad because it's an arts show. And I do think that there is more crossover than people are willing to admit. In the social sense, for sure. Speaking of the wonderful people involved, talk a little bit about your actors.
Yes. No, thank you for asking, because that is really important to me. There's a slight problem, I think, in the theatre world where people, even in a team, feel a bit competitive against each other. We've got the lovely Broadhead, who is my star, the star of my show, the face of my show, playing a typical English hero, forever a naive fool, Neddy Seagoon.
Nice.
Playing a singular role, because they are the titular hero,
the nucleus of the thing.
We've got the incredible Lindley playing the original goon, Eccles, a fantastic character, playing a villainous scoundrel, Moriarty, Count Moriarty.
That's it's been used a number of times now as a villain name, hasn't it, Moriarty?
Really? Yeah, once or twice, I hear. we've got the lovely Oisin Benz. Oisin Benz is a fantastic character, because my cast is all comprised of theatre study students, with the exception of Oisin. Oisin is a polytech student. They make lovely clothes. They participate in the Impresaurus troupe for a little bit, and they're just further evidence that sometimes you are at an advantage not being a theatre student coming into these things.
Absolutely.
And we've got the lovely Dobson playing Wallace Greenslade and Grytype. Broadhead is this wonderfully slapstick actor that I've directed on occasions before and has had great success in improvisation tournaments. Lindley is also fantastic. They were recently featured in this stunning performance of Chess, the musical.
Yes, Chess is... I'm not a musical guy, but Chess... we did it in high school, and I think it sold itself on me there.
Yes, yes. Broke the mold for you, did it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's just a bit different, isn't it?
And as I said, Oisin participated in Impresaurus, so they've all got their credentials. They've all got the five stars next to them, in my opinion.
So the improv comes up for a few of them there. Do you think that when they were creating the Goon Show originally, that it is... I know it was scripted in the end, but do you think a lot of it, the ideas portion of the creation process, would have been improv?
Oh, absolutely. Because I just, going back to what you said about fan fiction, which obviously is your word and I understand it, but there is a degree of ensemble. Of course, when we produce the show, we don't err from the written word, but in everything, all the space around it, there is the ensemble.
Sure.
They were an ensemble. We can't replicate their joy and their wonder, but in how they delivered it and how they wrote it. Ensemble created this, and Ensemble will create mine. Sure. You see, because Goon Show scripts vary bit to bit, because in the broadcast versions, they would improvise, because they would just insane characters. They'd try and make the other actors break out into fits of laughter. They were such villains to each other. It was brilliant.
Well, and speaking of villains to each other, just because you brought it up, and because Monty Python was in my head, did they end up friends at the end of it? There's obviously Monty Python had their fallings out.
I must admit, because I do own some books and biographies on the personalities, but I can't claim to actually have that expert knowledge. Obviously, the Goon Show stopped at a point.
Sure.
They came back for one or two things. I genuinely don't think I can speak to any authenticity on that.
Sure. And they all... I was kind of looking up their biographies earlier just because I was interested in any of them being surviving members. Obviously, none of them were. And they all died at a very similar time.
Yes, I suppose...
All early 2000s.
Yes, I think there is a degree in life where you just have those sorts of people and you turn to the left after 50 years and they're not there.
And they're suddenly, yeah. But you'd think that they would have probably approached it with a particular...
Oh, with a particular candor, I think, because I was looking up fantastic Spike Milligan quotes this morning, because Spike Milligan is I know more about him, I suppose, than the rest.
Sure.
And I think amongst his hilarious quotes was like, death is the only release from life, and I imagine he got a roar of applause from that. There are other excellent quotes, but I think I'd first have to ask about the swearing policy on your program.
No, you go nuts. not ridiculously overboard.
Well, of course. Yeah. What's an example? He got a personal letter of commendation from the Prince of Wales, currently King Charles III.
Yeah.
The lovely man reading it was barely through any of it. He'd only read the section of "I was a little kid and I loved listening to your stuff." In front of a giant audience, Spike Milligan says... The bastard. The grovelling bastard. they had such a wonderful humour about the war. I think if you read their accounts of the war, you'd have a very different taste of things. And it was something like Spike Milligan... His account of the start of the war was he was hauled out saying, "I'm too young to die." It was a family first for them, you know, to be conscripted. They got thrown on the train, and he got off on Bexhill on sea, and he said, which was weird because the train didn't stop there.
Yeah.
He just leaped off.
Yeah.
And how during the war his accounts was essentially almost being like a little school kid, playing hooky with the with the night out. But just another, I suppose, a deromanticization of the war, you know. His memories of the war, there's no mass of heroism, there's no charge of a trench. It's just every now and again he'd be in a hole, and then every now and again that hole would turn into hell and you were just trying to survive.
Sure.
An interesting deromanticization of the conflict.
So much media lionizes World War II, especially, that it is nice to have... It's just some British blokes, be honest, about what they were feeling.
Oh, the honesty of British blokes. I mean, I can't remember who exactly... Like, some of the goons met each other on a certain occasion, and it's because there was an artillery piece brought up to the top of a hill, and they fired at it, but they hadn't put any backstop on it. So one of the goons is coming up the hill, and one is coming down, and they stop them and says, "Have you seen an artillery piece? Because it's just rolled all the way down." Or another story where Spike Milligan witnessed a truck get hit by something and come on fire, and it gets driven away by the driver. They don't get out. It doesn't explode. But he says, "Why on earth did you do that?" And he says, "Well, I, you know, didn't want to cook my dinner twice, did I?"
I like that you've done the accent there, because there was something I was going to ask, actually.
Yes.
About that. Do you think that the British accent is particularly good for a certain type of comedy? Because Monty Python obviously did a very similar thing, where a lot of it is sort of leaning on the British accent, which obviously they can't help. They are.
Oh, yes. It's an affliction. I'm cursed forever.
But do you think that, or at least their cultural sensibilities, have a certain type of humour?
Humour's obviously changed throughout the ages. A joke in the 1700s would make us confused.
Yeah.
I think it has something more to the fact of the effect of World War II. I think the saying goes that the British people make such good comedy, such trailblazing comedy after the Second World War, because they were all conked on the head and went a bit mad.
Yeah.
But I do see your point that even in my own conversations with you, the accent is very good for dry humour, for sort of clever dry humour. Yeah. I see your point with that.
And were they, because Monty Python are all obviously Oxbridge guys, do we know, were the Goon Show guys the same sort of highbrow, high-educated folks, or were they sort of more middle-classy?
Class, I don't think I can speak to with a great deal of confidence, but I did check their backgrounds just this morning, and they are wildly diverse backgrounds. Sure. Spike Milligan was, and I learned this in a history paper, you'd call him a domiciled European because he was born in British India, but not to Indian or mixed individuals, and then moved to England. So he has a unique perspective, an interesting microcosm. I believe I've written it down. Sellers was born in London, Peter Sellers. Harry Secombe was Welsh.
That does make sense. That makes the last name make a bit more sense to me as well. Yeah.
Max Geraldry, so that's one of the background music individuals, was Dutch. This was very interesting for me. Ray Ellington, who's this fantastic blues artist, has a wonderfully interesting background. Born in England, so British through and through, but their father was African-American. Their mother was a Russian Jew. What? So there's not even a word for that.
No, you couldn't slur that man
you
out.
You couldn't... That's a way of putting it. Yes, so a wonderfully diverse background, and I believe another was born in Lancashire. So you have a man of the north, a man of the south. It's really a who's who of Britain at that time.
And is that reflected in what you can see in the radio show? Like, would you say it feels like it comes from a diverse perspective or a diverse England?
I think it necessarily must, because it's written by Spike Milligan, but like the characters and the format is diverse. Like, for instance, Spike Milligan surely influenced Major Bloodnock, who is this satire of this extraordinarily fat British Indian officer who's just a womanizer, amazingly corrupt. Sure. And obviously he served in India, so he's probably got those experiences. And then you've got people who you'd say are stereotypical of Southern England, or people who are stereotypical of Northern England. Sure. There's definitely a meeting of the minds in it.
Absolutely. You mentioned earlier off, I was trying to remember if it was on air or off air, when we were talking beforehand, that you're a theatre major.
Yes.
But a double major with history.
Yes, a double major of theatre studies and history, Bachelor of Arts. That's me.
That's you? That's all of you?
Exactly. I put nothing else on my CV. Yeah. I put nothing else on my gravestone. I believe there's one other in the University of Otago, which is...
I was going to say.
Must be a statistical improbability, surely.
No. I think, to be honest, on the topic, if you were in Britain, that would be a reasonably common double major.
Interesting.
I believe, you know, if you studied at Cambridge, I reckon there's probably a few people at Cambridge with history and theatre, something like that. At least at Waikato, where I studied, and here, now that you've said it, not a lot of history majors. But in doing a show from the 1950s, has the history major been helpful? Has it enlightened you to things, you know, this, that, or the other?
Oh, yes, it absolutely has. I'm very much intent on not modernising, not adapting the play. Obviously, there is that's conviction and copyright, CC. But, like, I suppose what's the point of doing the Goon Show if you say you set the story in modern-day Argentina? Sure. Yes, but it's really helped me understand the time they're living in, and the jokes, because the actors won't instantly understand the jokes, and that's my job. Just to summon an example, there's an often bit in the show where a little old lady will scream, "Stop that sinful American music!" Monty Python. And you wonder why they're going on about sinful American music. Well, it was the 1950s. It was this wonderfully weird time. After the war, there was the period of austerity. But then there was the golden years. And you always hear about that in America, where the world suddenly has this massive leap of growth. It happened in Britain too. But when this massive prosperity and wealth and change, people get very afraid of the change. Mm. It must feel weird to us now, but like... American music, the old grannies of England were like, this is strange and sinful. There was a in my research for this play, there was a poll conducted in Britain, and this will feel weird for the 1950s and the Cold War, but the US was viewed more unfavorably in 1950
than the Soviet
yeah. Union, exactly, because of that shock of consumerism,
sure.
and I suppose feel of moral decay for these people. Mm. It's just really sets this show as in between worlds, where you've still got this old aristocracy ruling Britain and this modern stuff. You see it a lot more with, say, Monty Python, where you've got the Beatles and sort of Lord Alec Douglas Hume Prime Minister.
Sure. No, but that is interesting, because it's a time period I don't know a lot about, actually. The 50s, you know, trying to think of things that I know from the 50s off the top of my head is a lot harder than
I'd be happy to say
things from the 60s or things from the 70s or even things from the 40s and 30s.
Mm.
So I will be getting along, hopefully.
Fantastic.
And I look forward to hearing the sort of
craziness.
Yeah, the craziness and the tonal quality of it. And because I, like I say, I do love Peter Sellers. Mm. I absolutely love Peter Sellers. I loved Bad Jelly the Witch growing up. You know, I don't know a huge amount about Spike Milligan, but there are aspects of him that I've really loved. So I look forward to hearing it.
Yeah.
So what is when?
When? August 14th, 15th, 1 p.m. It's lunchtime theatre. It's for your lunchtime. Come up for your lunch break, you know. Come and have a laugh. Take a relief from all the mundanity of the world. Leave us in your... Leave yourself in my capable hands.
Absolutely. And, it's at the...
Allen Hall Theatre.
Allen Hall Theatre.
Just to try and place it for people. It's across from the Unicol College.
Sure.
It's near the big central part of the university where, there's the law library nearby. It's this lovely old genteel building. It's near to the geology building, near to the clock tower. Put it into Google Maps. We live in a modern age.
Yeah, there's satellites looking at it right now.
Exactly. You don't get lost, huh?
I was going to ask, what's the venue like? How have you liked working there? I try to do this with all the theatre shows.
Oh, the venue is fantastic. The support is fantastic. I think the support in community theatre throughout Dunedin, it cannot be understated how massive the support is in Allen Hall, especially this year. So last year it was a great deal of fun working with the theatre tech students, because my piece is an assessment for other people. The backstage crew will be students doing their university grades. But this year, and this is the headline, this is the great big appeal and draw, 300 level students shall be working on the design elements.
Right.
So there's potential for extra work to build upon the strength of the staging or the costume or the lights or the sound. You'll have to come and see.
We'll you can grade them yourself mentally, in your head. It won't mean anything, but you can. You always are, right? Mm-hmm. Judging,
yes,
in your head. cool. That'll be a ton of fun.
Oh.
Normally, I'm trying to think if I've finished actually. So I'm just trying to mentally go through my head. There were things we were meant to talk about. I think we've covered it all.
We've covered.
Was there any? I'll open it up. Open the floor up if there's anything else.
Open the floor up.
Prepared. We won't open the floor up. Those little earthquakes under Ruapehu are threatening to open the floor up.
That would be great. A massive problem. I shan't give too much away about the scripts, but Spike Milligan often liked to diversify his scripts by taking the goons outside of Britain. That's what I've tried to do. Last year's script was in Britain. This year's script is in Argentina. And all the writing comes...
Argentina?
Yeah, Argentina.
Like post-war Argentina? Like anything to do with that involved in the
Perhaps. Sure. Well, you'd surprise it when you listen to the stuff, but it makes sense. All these things are influenced by real day events. This script was published 2 months after the fall of Juan Perón's dictatorship,
and
people in Britain on the newspapers would be reading it, and it would look to them like goonery, utter insane stuff.
Sure,
I've written down here that it's like the fall of his dictatorship saw 50% inflation. Saw a 70% devaluation of the peso. The Air Force are coming down the street, and the Navy are sort of... That sounds like the Goon Show, that the Navy are like... There's a ship on the road marching towards the capital. Yeah, so as you can see, the goons took something silly and they've made it something silly. So that's all I shall spoil.
Okay, okay. So yeah, if any of it's intriguing to you, the listener, get along. And there's a question that I have been trying to ask all my interviewees that I've been trying to make a thing on the show. Mm-hmm. Because it's the late breakfast show, what is your favourite breakfast food?
Oh, my favourite breakfast food. Pasta, beans and cheese. A peculiarly British
breakfast. I was going to say, that's quite continental.
That's quite continental. Oh, and when we put the cheese on, we think it's quite bougie, actually.
Yeah. Ooh, you've got the cheese.
Oh, my God. Seasoning. What next? Yeah. What next will become French?
Awesome. No, yeah, fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Harry. It's been lovely talking to you today. Mm. Are there tickets? We should probably talk about that. Are there tickets? How does the ticketing work?
So the ticketing is on Humanitix. It is up right now. The poster is nearly done. So this is, I suppose, sort of like a pre-production, pre-advertisement run, me coming in today.
Yeah,
but the poster shall be nearly done. And then on all your social medias, you'll be barraged constantly. You should come, you should come, you should come.
And listen, as a person who's advertised a show before, it can be annoying. Really? And the people doing it understand that it can be annoying, but it really only works if you see it all the time.
Exactly.
You just have to flood people's social media feeds with your advertising. So I look forward to seeing that as well. Hopefully the algorithm decides that I am worthy.
Yeah, smiles upon me.
Yeah, of seeing that. Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. Thank you, Harry.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Is there anyone you'd like to shout out?
Oh, who would I like to shout out? I've directed before in the past, and it would be very lovely to shout out people I've worked with very closely on that. Jess Keogh, K-Masters, and of course Martin Roberts. Fantastic. You know, I couldn't be here without you.
We had Jess on the show.
Goonery. Oh, my fantastic.
Point. I can't remember what for.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's been in here.
Yeah. My final message is that I claim Dunedin in the name of Goonland.
Fantastic, fantastic. Oh, actually, there was something I meant to...
Oh, should I clarify what goon means in this context?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, listen, the word goon has had some unfortunate meanings thrown on it in the past 5-10 years.
Shamefully, I like that because I think that it will draw people's eyes if there's a big word saying goon, but I must clarify, I do not mean that. I do not even mean that. Goon in this example refers literally to a little henchman.
Yeah.
But also like there are such wonderful things that will really draw the eye, like gooning about.
Yeah.
Goon mania. But it's meant to just be silliness. I swear. When we say we're gooning about, we don't mean that.
Just regular silliness.
Or like that. There's that and there's the alcohol.
Yeah, no, it's... But it's a funny word as well.
Yeah, exactly. If it draws the eyes, you know, I shan't complain.
Fantastic. Awesome. Thank you, Harry. I'm going to...
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.